Okay. And I can speak, I can roll now. Okay.
Yes.
Yomo is sitting next to me and guiding me. Today is Sunday, the 14th of June, 2020. And I'm happy to say Boker Tov, Shavua Tov to everyone listening, both in front of me on the screen and many who will hear it across the wide expanse of Jewish existence on yutorah.org. We're picking up exactly where we left off, but I simply want to comment. Evidently, I quoted an expression, I said it can't begin till the fat lady sings. And Aya Gordon said to me, the expression is, it ain't over until the fat lady sings. The origin of this expression is from attending an opera. The son asks his father, Dad, when is this going to be over? To which he responds, it ain't over until the fat lady sings. The last major solo of an opera is when the soprano who is dying sings her aria. Okay? As I recall, and what I was referring to was that in Ebbets Field, they used to say, when will the game begin? And they would say, it can't begin until the fat lady sings. And it seems the lady who sang the Star-Spangled Banner was gesund, we'll put it that way, a healthy lady. And when she finished, play ball. Okay, that's the way I understood it. I want to say we dealing with this problem of wearing a watch on Shabbat. We've come a long way from Reb Menashe Klein. We've seen Derech HaShulchan, the Mishnah Brura, the Vilna Gaon, the Chaya Adam, and we got involved last week with a wonderful new sefer, a set of svarim, Pinini Halacha from Rabbi Eliezer Melamed. And I mentioned, not really knowing Rabbi Eliezer Melamed well, I mentioned that this man is very interesting, very unique. He's not afraid to paskin, not afraid to take a stand. And his Pinini Halacha reads very beautifully. He goes question by question and gives you Halacha Lemaisa. I didn't realize how correct my words were. If you're up to date on what's going on in Israel and you saw the latest B'Sheva distributed this past Thursday, Friday, there's a major article. Rabbi Melamed always has a column and a full page column. Generally, it's on Halacha. And this time, he's defending himself. And if I can put it all together, it seems that the Makor Rishon held a Zoom conference of Jews around the world. That which unites us is more important than that which divides us. And Rabbi Melamed took place and interacted, dialogued with a Reform woman rabbi from Paris, from France. And he was criticized by many other rabbanim in the world of religious Zionism. And I want to thank Rabbi Grinstein for bringing this to my attention. And I saw Rabbi Grinstein wrote a letter. I don't want to go into all the details, but what we're touching upon here is a controversy that has haunted us for 150 years. Literally 150 years. The Jews in Germany worked very hard. I've lectured on this. I don't want to repeat it now, but Rav Hirsch worked very hard in 1876. He finally got the German parliament to pass the Austritt law that the Orthodox community could leave the regular general Gemeinde and be recognized on its own and not have to address innovative rabbis, liberal rabbis. As rabbi, they have nothing to do with Torah, very little to do with Yiddishkeit. We're on our own. The Würzburger Rav, Rav Zelikman Bamberger, the Yad HaLevi, immediately took issue with Rav Hirsch. that which unites us a lot more important than that which divides us. And as many of you know, until Hitler destroyed the world, there always were two different kahilot in Germany. One, the Altstadt community, which was totally Orthodox, and one, the general Gemeinde, which had Torah shuls and shuls that had innovations and compromises. This problem lives on. It haunts us in the United States. We'll come into it in our Monday class, if not this year, certainly next term, Be'ezrat Hashem, Synagogue Council, exactly the same dilemma. The Rav provided a certain amount of guidance, but that guidance is difficult to translate halacha lemaisa, the difference between klapei panim, klapei chutz, on halachic matters. We have nothing in common. There can be no dialogue on general matters, money, anti-Semitism, Zionism, etc. That which unites us infinitely more important than that which divides us. And this issue hangs fire, but it's interesting that here in the religious Zionist circles, here is Rabbi Melamed dialoguing with a reform woman rabbi. And as I said a week ago, I've always had the impression that he stands on his own two feet. He's unique. And I now can confirm it. And Rabbi Grinstein filled me in on even more details that in his yeshiva, and remember, I have a grandson who's a Talmud of his, a Talmud Mufak. He was Masad Kedushin at this grandson's wedding. And in his kehila, in Habracha, his minion davens like my minion, 6:30 to 8, finish at 8, never later. In my minion, at 8 o'clock, everyone goes home. You do what you want, right? I know what I do. It's Baruch Hashem. It's the best time of the week to do a few Daf Gemara and keep up with my learning cycle. But others go home, read the newspaper, relax, each one to their own way of life. In Habracha, I'm told, you make Kiddush, and at 8:15, he starts a two-hour shiur, and he's makpid that his disciples, his followers, learn 6 hours every Shabbat. And he spells it out. He doesn't just say you have to learn. Shabbat is not just a day for Kiddush and friendship and collation. 6 hours. So I now feel very justified in mentioning that he is unique. All right, so we went through all this psakim last week, mainly a lot of insight, very beautifully written, and anything that services the body, you're absolutely allowed to wear. And even if it's a raincoat, but the raincoat is to protect your body, absolutely. Even if it's a nylon covering of a rain hat, even though it's a machlekes hapaiskim, he's willing to depend upon Rabbi Menashe Klein. And since it's there to protect your hat, which is part of your clothes, it's all part of your body, yesh al mi lismoch. On Tachshitim, he raises the very problem which haunts us. How do you define the tachshit? Women, easier to say, women need jewelry. Do men need jewelry? Do we wear tachshitim? And here he paskins that even though Meikah Hadin and so many Gedolei Yisrael, the Vilna Gaon and others were opposed, but nevertheless, this is an issue where you don't want to place stumbling blocks that women should feel they have to rebel. So we're somach lekula, and we allow certainly women to wear tachshitim. We're not choshish, they'll take it off and show it around. And let me pick up where I left off last week. He says, today, this fear of women taking off the jewelry and showing it around in a Rishut HaRabim is much less prevalent than 100 200 years ago. And his reason is very interesting. Baruch Hashem, we're wealthier today. Who doesn't have jewelry? Take a look, go to 13th Avenue Borough Park, walk up and down the streets, go to Shiftei Yisrael in Geula, walk up and down the streets, go to the malls that cater, the kanyonim that cater to the religious population in Ramot, in the North Jerusalem, the Bells area, so much jewelry is available for sale. People today have much more jewelry than 100 years ago. 100 years ago, you showed off your jewelry. To use the words of the Aruch HaShulchan, you were a shachtsan or a shachtsanit. Nowadays, everyone has jewelry. All right, this one a little bit more expensive, less expensive. Today, people wear beautiful jewelry, and it's worth $10. It's phony jewelry. Is there a special word for jomo? Do you know a special word for jewelry that's not real? And why? We'll come to this later. We're living in a world where they're worried about thieves. Look what happened in the United States. Can you believe it? I saw the videos of Fifth Avenue, one store after another boarded up. Videos of Macy's pulling out millions of dollars worth of clothes, jewelry, electronics, etc. So thieves. So today they wear false jewelry. I see it sold all the time. I can't tell the difference. You look at these rings. Wow, you think, wow, what a diamond ring. A diamond ring, a piece of glass cut very beautifully. So he brings that as another proof that bisman hazeh, we don't have to be chayshish about dalar amot, taking it off, showing it off. And if that's the case, maybe even the Vilna Gaon would agree that we can wear jewelry on Shabbat. And that concept of not putting the women into a position where tov shiyu shogig and value mezidin, where they're going to rebel. So that's what I showed you last week. And it's also very interesting what I spoke about, what happened to me during the week. I mentioned Rav Horowitz of Connecticut and his long footnote in the Sefer HaMitzvot Melamed Zchut on what happened in Lita, in White Russia, perhaps parts of Poland. Religious women, Rosh Yeshiva's wives, great Rabbanim's wives, and they didn't cover their hair in public. And he's Melamed Zchut, a long, long footnote. What makes that footnote very exciting for me is I once asked Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, I said to Aaron, did you ever discuss this topic with your father-in-law, with our Rebbe? And he said, yes. And he told me over the conversation, word by word. And Reb Aaron's take on what the Reb said was word by word what I later found in Rav Horowitz's commentary in the Sefer Mitzvot. So very fascinating. All right, so I mentioned that. It's the same concept. Please don't tell them not to wear tachshitim. It's be melamed zchut, fine. So this week, I have a Talmud, it was my Talmud in the 60s, a kid in MTA. You never know the influence you have. He was a kid from Kew Gardens Hills, like all the other kids. I had many kids from Queens. Queens was then building up the late 50s, early 60s. Queens was becoming Queens. So this kid, Moshe Wiener, Mark, a similar name to yours, he went on to become a great Lubavitcher Chassid, a Talmud Chacham. He's a Rav in New York, and he publishes Sfarim, writes a beautiful Hebrew. And he was mechabed me, sent me a link to two svarim that he published. I've seen this one sefer I saw before. One sefer seems to be new, and he's stealing one sefer, which I've quoted to you in class. He shows that it's absolutely, positively a Jew. Even a Litvak has to have a beard. And evidently he's trying to convince his Rebbe of yore to grow a beard. All right, he hasn't convinced me yet. We still have to solve the problem of what went on in Mir and Slabodka and the Panovich and Tells. Rebbeinu Shel Olam, I'm still a kid studying there. They didn't have beards. I don't have a beard. I'm a kid. What do you want out of me? I'm 19, 20 years old. I never want to lose that feeling. When I learned in Lakewood, who had a beard? What are you talking about? So that's one sefer. But all right, I give him credit. Halavai, all my grandchildren have beards, and great-grandchildren, they should all have beards. All the men I'm talking about, I'll be very happy, believe me. The other sefer, he deals with women and proper dress, not wearing pants, an entire sefer devoted to not wearing pants. And very fascinating sources, what he quotes, and he gets involved with Reb Moshe and Reb Aaron Cutler and Lakewood Yeshiva, and very interesting material. But when all is said and done, you have to understand who you're dealing with, the context in which you're dealing, and the principle of Toshu Shkogig and Valadu Mezidim. It's a very important, the whole concept of tochecha, don't be mochiach when it's not going to be successful, when they're not going to listen. So I studied what he wrote, but on the other hand, I have to live in a certain realistic world, and we have to be considerate of our women. And I think the Sefer Mitzvot and Rav Horowitz's commentary and the Rav, and I've heard from others now, yesh al mi lismoch, that we don't have to rebuke. To set an example, to inspire, absolutely. But to reprimand, low key, not high key. And halacha l'maisa with the kishutim, this is what he paskins, and the thought that he develops that in modern times we have so much more jewelry, it's something that I believe is totally halachically valid. And it could be, if the Vilna Gaon were alive today, he would not be so machmir with this shash, shem yitalenu, yitatel dalet amot bishuta rabin. Okay. Then he goes in to the watch. And here too, it's a tremendous problem. The pocket watch that my grandfather took out of his pocket and had a chain made, and I believe it was gold plated. I don't think it was 14 karat, but I know how much my grandfather loved that watch, Yotzei Min HaKlal. And I know that whole generation, all right, there's a big shaila. Can you wear it? Is this carrying? But it's the whole basic shaila is it a kishut? Is it a decoration? Is this a man? Is he allowed to wear it? Can he wear this decoration? He's not a woman. A woman wears jewelry. All right, there are men who wear jewelry. I know men were successful. I've seen men, maybe you have too, with diamond rings. They wear rings made for men. It's not the same shape or format like a woman's ring, but they show, all right, Nick. I made it. All right. I hope in Israel we don't have this mentality, but I've seen it. So can a man wear a kishut? And okay, so this hinges upon Mark and his sword. If the case with diamonds on it was made first, and then you found the sword to fit in, it could be that case, you could attach it around your neck. Its main purpose is jewelry, a kishut. But if you had the sword and then you made a case, how can you walk around with a sword on Shabbos? The same thing with the pocket watch. If the whole purpose is to show it off, and even if it stops running, you will wear it. It could be you were allowed to put it a chain around your neck. It's a kishut, no different than a woman wearing a necklace. If, on the other hand, the minute it stops running, you put it aside, you're not going to wear it, then it's a watch. It's nothing to do. It's a kli, it's a fork, a spoon. Then you're not allowed. But what about a wristwatch? And here, and I'll show you afterwards, Reb Moshe, but here he paskins lahalacha, that perhaps bisman hazeh you're allowed to wear it. Why? Because look, the wristwatch is, you're not carrying it. It's attached to your body. And the main purpose is, it's like clothes. It's to make you feel comfortable. We walk and talk and we look at the wristwatch like this. We never take it off. You don't take off a wristwatch. You look like this. The only time you're going to take it off is to set it, to reset it, to play with the alarm. But normally speaking, you don't take it off. He says, if this is the case, then maybe it's no different than any other item of clothes. It's there to make the person feel comfortable. And lahalacha, he is paskening that if you're in a reshit harabim and you want to wear a wristwatch, you would be allowed. Okay. Then he goes one step further. What about another problem? And here we come back to a problem that was just raised in Israel. I couldn't believe it. They raised the problem on Shavuot. What am I talking about? In order to go to the Kotel, there was a lottery. So among the hundreds of people that were allowed with certain time limitations, etc., my granddaughter. So she had to bring the certificate that I showed you. I still have it in my dining area in my house, the certificate. It's a document. It's interesting. But you had to bring it to Dat Seihut. Are you allowed to take it to Dat Seihut on Yontif, on Shabbos? And the question came up. I don't understand the question. What's wrong with it to Dat Seihut? There's an Eruv. But, all right, people love to ask questions. They paskim the halacha, yes. I want to ask a different question. Here we are in Russia, and our instructions, very simple. Your passport, your visa, your money, your addresses of who you have to visit can never be left in the hotel room. And I can tell you as a fact, there was a big shot. We mentioned Davar, the Mapai paper. The editor of that paper was going to Russia, a conference of editors of newspapers international. And the communists had to let everyone in, even from Israel. Otherwise, the conference would not be held in Moscow. It brings in hard currency. And she was briefed. And she's above the law. No, I'm an official, this, that. P.S. She left it in the hotel. The day she came back, the first day, all gone. Grounded. No identity. Had to waste endless hours in the police station. And then the day she was leaving, 3-4 days later, that morning, the KGB brings, oh, we found your documents. You see how honest the Russian people are. So this is this is not a request that is unreasonable. Lehefech, it is an absolute order. So how do you carry? And he deals with this too. Now, interestingly, he gives two solutions. One, to wear it in your hat. What's the greatness of wearing it in your hat? It's above 10 tfachim. It's makom haptua. The other one is, put it, I'm quoting him, put it in your pants where it won't fall down. The belt will hold it in place, but it's hotza al yedei shinui. So there's no isid d'oraita. I gave a better solution. The hat is excellent, and putting it in your pants is always the fear it can fall. It's not so simple. The other solution is to put it in your shoe. Putting it in your shoe, it's gimel tvachim, lavud to the ground. It's not carrying. Interesting. I wound up putting it into my hat. I found that to be the easiest, and I have the hat. I've shown it in the Kollel a number of times over the decades. Maybe one day it'll be in a museum. It was my father's hat as a postman from the early 30s, a Canadian. It's from where Jack comes from, but not where Jack. He's from Toronto. This is Montreal. It's from a rural Canadian postman hat where the weather is very cold. So the hat I inherited from my father was very good for Russia, cold, ear laps. And my wife made a pocket inside the top part of the hat, and the passport, the money, the visa were all there. And Baruch Hashem, we never had a problem. But he deals with it here. So this is Rav Melamed. But we haven't finished. We have not finished. What did we talk about? It's a half hour ago already. Looting, robbing. Very sad. There's a Rebbe in YU, was a Rebbe in YU, Rabbi Michael Hecht, dear friend. Few years younger. So whenever kids were in his class and they would meet me, I was a Rebbe, it's the 60s we're talking, I would say, I saved your Rebbe's life. Ask Rabbi Hecht the story. And the kids would come back to me with such awe. Stories as follows. We went to Bnei Akiva. Bnei Akiva was in a big shul called Kehilat Israel, K-I. Rabbi Usher Ziv was the rabbi. This shul was at the other end of Cretona Park. That once was the East Bronx, a very Jewish neighborhood. A lot of non-Jews grew up there, as you know, including the Secretary of State of the United States years ago. And they read. They all speak a beautiful Yiddish. When he got off the plane, remember Shapir met Powell, and Powell's first words were, Shalom Aleichem Reb Yid, wie machst man? And Shamir, whose native language was Yiddish, practically fainted. Bifneyam v'yeda, this Afro-American Secretary of State, and I'm told he is a wonderful person. They wanted him to run for president, but his wife nixed it for fear he'd be assassinated. Lo aleinu, what we're up against in this world in the year 2020. So we came out of Bnei Akiva. Now, by the 60s, the Bronx is starting to change drastically. This is in the 50s, I should say. The change is beginning. And two blacks come over to us with knives, give us your money. So I give them a discourse. I guess as a young kid already, I knew how to speak. I was all of, 11, 12, 13 perhaps. Michael was, let's say, 11, 2 years younger, 3 years younger. I say this is the end of the Holy Sabbath. We're not allowed to touch money on the Sabbath. We have no money. We apologize to you that we can't help you. And I guess these two black kids, teenagers, were so impressed with my drasha that they let us go. But God have mercy. People hold you up. People rob. Tell me, you're going out Shabbos? It's a bad neighborhood already. Maybe you should put money in your hat, in your shoe. And if they hold you up on Shabbos, pull out the $25, $20, $10, depends when, and give it to them. And believe it or not, I have to tell you, when Rabbi Grinstein, you sent me this, I'll tell you something you don't know. This Shaila came up. Here it is. I believe this is from where they answer all emails with Shailot, B'marech HaBazak. Rabbi Mann works for them. What's the kollel called? Eretz Chemda. And he got those here. The Matzav HaBitchoni, it's very bad here. Ganavim are all over. And if you don't have money to give them, they get mad, don't believe you, and they can hit you and even shoot you. And the Ganavim don't understand the difference between the weekdays to Shabbat. And they're not going to believe your explanation. And they asked the very question, can you carry money with you on Shabbat? It could be pikuach nefesh. And they paskin lahalacha, pin it in the inside of your jacket. Take a $10 bill, whatever it is, and pin it. Use two pins. It's a chibur. You're carrying it kliachayad, shinui, lahalacha veyamatia. What I want to tell you is, and this can be checked out, David Posen, I love your smile, but it's not that's not a real you. It's just a nice picture that you showed to your girlfriends or something. Wow. David, check this out. I remember that Rabbi Emanuel Rackman gave the same psak. I think Far Rockaway was starting to change. People were being held up. This is Meisim B'chol Yom, even today. It's not ancient history. But Rabbi Rackman gave the same psak. Put a $10 bill in your hat. And if they bother you on Shabbos, you saved your life. They're not going to hit you, not going to beat you, not going to shoot you. Give them the Favofana, Falozana $10 bill. And Ben Shgoimel, when you get away from them. So that this psak, as I remember, right here, is exactly halacha lemaisa, Rabbi Emanuel Rackman, when he still was in Lawrence, Far Rockaway. I don't think this psak is from when he comes to Fifth Avenue Synagogue. All right, in Manhattan, they can also hold you up, but I don't believe it was as widely spread as it was in Far Rockaway. Gentlemen, I still haven't finished. This is a tshuva that Effie ate my heart out when I was a kid. You don't know how much I struggled with it. Effie, if you come to see me later this week, I have more information for you, okay? On our joint project. This is Reb Moshe Feinstein, Igrot Moshe, Orach Chaim, the first volume. This is 1959, when the first volume, Igrot Moshe, came out. And we were literally dancing. Then you have no idea. We were so happy. And then we asked the Rav, and he shut down Rav Moshe. I could see he wasn't as happy as we were. And what was he upset about? Rav Moshe ushering liquid soap on Shabbos. I remember he said, what is he? Doesn't understand. He doesn't understand how it works. As a chemist, it was after Shia. But we were happy because why? Until then, Rav Moshe's shuvat circulated Baal Peh. And now we had Reb Moshe in print. So I'm quoting Tshuva Kuf Yud Aleph. And the Tshuva was written 1957. That's exactly the year I went into the Rav Shia. It's written to Rav Yud Gordon, Rav Yehuda Gordon, I just corresponded this morning with Aryeh Gordon. Maybe it's your father, Aryeh. And what's the tshuva about? If you're allowed to wear a wristwatch on Shabbos. And Reb Moshe raises the very issue, is this a tachshit? Isn't a tachshit? What kind of tachshit it is? Can it be considered, is you're wearing it on your body, you're not carrying? On the other hand, if it is a tachshit, would you still wear it if it stopped, if the watch stopped running? And Reb Moshe deals with this, and he reaches the conclusion that it probably is permissible. And he quotes a Gemara, in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Chaf. The Gemara there deals with the old Mordechai Kaplan problem. You put a scarf around your neck. All right, a scarf. Dove, everyone agrees you can wear a scarf on Shabbos. No one in the world would say you can't wear a scarf, Vic. It's to protect your neck. Vic, are you hearing me clearly today? Good, okay. So the new system works. I'm like a singer. I don't know. You see singers sing. Now I understand why. They say you can speak very low and it picks it up beautifully, and we're not even using this full power. So you wear a scarf. All right, a scarf, Herbie, no problem. What about if you need a handkerchief to blow your nose? So you can tie two handkerchiefs together and use it as a scarf. But the real purpose is it's a handkerchief. And yet the Gemara seems to say it's allowed. It's part of your body. It's not carrying. If that's the case, even if the watch is no more than a kli, but it's part of your body, you're keeping it like this, you're not taking it off, Reb Moshe says, it could be, me'ikar hadin, you would be allowed. But then Reb Moshe adds a bombshell. What's the bombshell? Reb Moshe came to America in 1937. His early years were in Europe. He lived on the east side. There were plenty of alt-rightniks living on the east side. Many people wore the pocket watch as jewelry on display. And Reb Moshe felt that was not allowed, because if your watch stopped running, you no longer wore it, even though it was gold-plated. Once you no longer wear it, if the watch stops running, that is a sign that it is not a takshit, but a utensil. A spoon, a fork, a watch to service you. Reb Moshe felt you can't wear it on Shabbat. Reb Moshe was worried that if we permit a wristwatch, the next person will wear a pocket watch. He'll hear a wristwatch is permissible. He'll draw the conclusion all watches are permissible. And here's the paragraph that took my sleep away. Anyone remember this paragraph? Ra'ui, l'chol ben Torah, v'yorei shamayim, shelo levofsho b'shabbat, kidei shelo yavou l'chakel. B'chol sha'on, v'shelo yavo la'akel b'sha'on ze la'halbisho al ha'katenet, she'habei lo yadu la'hafrish, v'chein ani mitzaveh le'talmidai. And that's what Reb Moshe paskened la'halacha. that anyone who's a Ben Torah, the Yerei Shamayim, those are Reb Moshe's words. And I wanted to wear a watch. How can you live without a watch? You have to know when to go to shul. You have to know when to go to Bnei Akiva. You have to know when to daven. You have to know when you can make Havdalah. A watch? How can you live without a watch? And here, Yerei Shamayim, Ben Torah. And this is what I tell my Talmidim. Don't wear a wristwatch. Because if you wear a wristwatch, Chaim Yankel and three other people are going to go around with their pocket watch hanging in front of their shirt, in front of their jacket, in front of their vest. You generally wore it. People wore a three-piece suit. I had friends, Rabbanim, prominent Rabbanim, and they always were in a three-piece suit. We once had a barbecue in New York, July 4th. This was already when I was visiting from Israel. And some of them came with their three-piece suits. Malchus said, even to a barbecue, they can't take the vest off. But the vest, the pocket watch hanging down, Reb Moshe Lahalacha. If you're a Ben Torah, if V'chein ra'ui l'chol ben Torah v'yarei shamayim shelo levo shobu Shabbat. And you know what the worst part is? I remembered being tortured by Rav Moshe's psak, but I don't remember what I did. Did I wear a watch? Didn't I wear a watch? Don't remember. I have to maybe find a friend from Bnei Akiva and ask him, do you remember what we did on Shabbos? I honestly, honestly don't remember. All right. This is the wristwatch. This is very fascinating. You see, you can open up the tshuva of Menashe Klein and you can go through it and see next to nothing out of it beyond the immediate shaila. But you can open up a tshuva, and that same tshuva, when you go a little bit deeper, what he's writing about, wow, Kol HaTorah Kula in that tshuva. The very beginning where he says we have to be melamed zchut in Klal Yisrael. Can you approach halacha like that? Is it a totally objective, or is there subjectivity? And the more you learn, the more you see that in paskening halacha, there's a balance. Objectivity and subjectivity with a capital S, Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontif. Rich man, poor man. Guests are coming. No time left to re-cook the meat, the soup, the fish. Wow. So it's very fascinating. And then the whole question of the watch takes us into the whole world of what we can carry, what we can't carry. What do you do in Russia? What do you do in Far Rockaway? Neighborhoods changing. What do you do when the Bronx is burning? Bonfire of Vanities, Wolf's famous book. I had the schut. I met the author in the Hamptons one Sunday. I was Scotland residence, and this was Sunday morning, and we were walking. I was going to speak. There was some event happening in the kosher restaurant. And on the street, we see a big crowd. And there's the author of Bonfire Vanities, dressed like a rav going to shul on Shabbos to preach, beautiful suit with a vest, with a beautiful Hamburg. And you should have seen the crowd around him. You might think, Gadol Hador. Wow. With they surrounding him and listening to his words of wisdom. All right, I put the words of wisdom here. Can you, what do you do when you have to walk in the Bronx on Shabbos? And can you put the $10 bill in your hat? La halacha ula ma'aseh. Let me go a drop further. Very interesting question. And this takes us back to the whole question of Erev. It's a legal fiction. What are you doing? A city of millions. And here you have a simple Erev. It's not mechitzat. It's wires. Siratapetach. What's happening here? Watch. Baruch Ato Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nihyeh B'Dvaro. Okay. So Shiloh, whether I can use this today. New York Yankee water bottle. As far as I know, the major leagues are not using Zoom and they are totally mitbatlim achshav, doing nothing. All right, nikavelatov. Mishnah halacha tchelik yud aleph siman shin yud aleph. I repeat, tchelik yud aleph siman shin yud aleph. And he doesn't give a name. Who's asking? And what is this person asking? This person is afraid to be samach on the Erev on Shabbat. Why is he afraid? Because this Shabbat, he's in a place where there is an Erev. He's in Kew Gardens Hills. Kew Gardens Hills is one of the first places to have an Erev in the United States. Next Shabbat, he's going to be elsewhere. He'll be in Maplewood, New Jersey. Maplewood, New Jersey? If anyone would have told me when I was building that shul from the ground 60 years ago, that one day there'll be an Erev in Maplewood, New Jersey. I say, you're as big an idiot as the guy who told me that one day I'll be lecturing to an inanimated screen and saying Divrei Torah. All right, he's worried stiff. Here he can carry. Next week he'll think he's still able to carry. He'll forget where he is. And he'll carry Chas v'Chalila, Rishut HaRabim, and Isidi Oraita, Chayev Skilan, Nishta Kleinekaiten. No small matter. So tell me what's wrong. What's wrong? Fine. Don't carry. What's wrong? I can tell you something else. This is not a fear of individuals. Great Rabbanim. How many of you come from Elizabeth, New Jersey? Herbie? Who is the Rav? Who built Elizabeth? Rav Pinchas Mordechai Teitz. It's my mentor in the rabbinate. One of the great individuals I was privileged to know quite intimately. My chavruta, Jerry Blau, Rav Yosef Blau, married his daughter, Rivka. Should live and be well. I taught another daughter, etc. Rav Blau, Rav Teitz, never wanted to build an Erev in Elizabeth. Why? Because he said, right, we'll build an Erev in Elizabeth. How many communities have Erev? The kids, the grandchildren will move out, they'll live elsewhere, they'll think they can carry Shabbos. They'll grow up never knowing that carrying Shabbos is an Issa D'Oraita. And I'll tell you the truth, if you take the average Israeli kid, I remember when I took grandsons to America years ago, The first thing I told them was, we're going to Borough Park, we're going to Brooklyn. You cannot carry on Shabbos. There's no Erev at that time. Today, Baruch Hashem, there's an Erev, but we're talking 20, 30 years ago. No Erev. And you grow up in Israel. Who ever heard of not carrying Shabbos? Wherever you go, there's an Erev. Every community, even Tel Aviv, has a mayor who is as distant from knowing what Torah is about as I am from reading the Chinese Sanskrit Constitution of Independence. Huldai. Doesn't matter. Tel Aviv has an Erev. Haifa has an Erev. Yerushalayim, certainly an Erev. Every moshav, every religious kibbutz, wherever you turn, there are even kibbutzim today that are not religious, but they now have religious people living there. It's the whole story of modern Israel, contemporary Israel. They have an Erev. Whoever heard the army, one of the things the rabbinate does, immediately they put up an Erev. They have wiring, all types of, immediately can put up an Erev, and within 10 minutes, the army can put an Erev around a big area. All right, when they're at battle, you don't have to worry about an Erev, the Gemara and Eruvin. But we're talking, normally speaking, everyone has an Erev, you don't know, all right. So he's asking a very interesting question. What the question really is the Gemara and Eruvin, Daf Mem Aleph, Daf Samach Aleph, Amid Bet, 61b. And here is something halacha lemaisa, hadar im ha'akum b'chatzea, o im mi she'ein molde b'erev, harei zer oser alav. In order to build an erev, it's not just building the fence, the wall, or the symbolic wall, call it what you wish, but people have to join together. Erev Chatzerot, everyone joins together. We become one family. That's perfect. When I look around and I see who my neighbors are, from Jews, people who believe. What about if you're building an Erev and in the community are non-Jews or people who don't believe in an Erev? And the halacha is you cannot establish a joint property, a joint ownership, a joint Erev until you rent the property of the non-Jews or the Jews who don't believe. And all of you know who have been involved in building an Erev in, for sake of argument, New York. They rent the city from the mayor, from the people who have the authority to rent it out. Their documents, legal documents, signed, the dollar bill changes hands. And that way, even though they're Gentiles living there, or Jews who don't believe, don't know what an Erev is, don't care about an Erev. And this person is asking a very real question. Because if you recall what I spoke about and taught about a few years ago, a number of years ago, many years ago already, the Rush, we're a Talmud of the Rush, we're talking the, one of the greatest of the Rishonim, one of the pillars upon which the Halacha is based, the Rush, the Rif, the Rambam. And the Rush Talmud says to him, this is very fishy, a legal fiction. I don't believe in an Erev. And the Rush maledicts him, you're an apikiris, and tells him off. And this is later repeated by the Chatam Sofer. You're all familiar, all heard me say more than once, any Hungarian who says, I don't believe in an Erev, it's a legal fiction, there are a million people here, what are you telling me about an Erev? Wow, the Chatam Sofer calls this man a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate sinner. Apikiris. Wow. So this poor guy is asking Rabbi Menashe Klein, if I don't carry, and he gives him the reason. It's not that I don't believe, but chas v'chalila, klapei chutz, it looks like I am a rebellious Jew. I am a Karaite. I am a Sadducee. I am a Reformed Jew. I am a conservative Jew. I don't believe in an Erev. And this is exactly the Shaila that Rav Menashe Klein gets. And he tells him, yes, I understand your question. And Rav Menashe Klein quotes Chassidic Poskim, the Minchat Laza, the Bnei Yisachar. And he says, yes, someone who doesn't carry with his an Erev, Chayshinen Shema Minut Nisrakabo. We are apprehensive that Chas V'Chalila, the man is an Apikoros. And you see, this is Yiddishkeit. This is Torah. This is Torah Shebaal Peh. This is the way Torah Shebaal Peh functions. One has to be a Talmud Chacham. One has to be a Lamdan. But we don't encourage Nizirut. We don't encourage endless Chumras. This is Torah's a Torah Chaim. You all understand the whole Pasha of Nazir. Chayev Chatat Mitnei Shehizir Et Atzmo Min Hayayin. Could you imagine that if you deny yourself wine, you're a Nazi, you have to bring a cup of chatat afterwards. All right, there's a simple question. If that's the case, why do we have Nazirut in the Torah? And here there's a very important answer, because no two people are alike. Most of us are very happy to be centrist, I'll use that word, mainstream. But there may be a person who's extreme, certain aspects of his life story. So for him, the Torah established laws of Nazirut. It's not a lachatchila, but it's a b'diavad to enable every person to feel teretic. And that's the famous story with Rav Kook. When he met the Nazir was a Talmud Chacham, and he broadened, and he went to university. And who knows what he saw in university and his attitude towards Shas and Peskim and learning. And then he comes back with Belev and Nefesh, and he felt he had to do something to expiate what he thought about when he was in university in Switzerland. And Rav Kook told him Ke'ein Nizirut, to take on certain aspects of Nizirut. That was very incredibly smart in Rav Kook's part. And he became the famous Rav David HaKohen, the famous Nazir, the father of Asher Yashiv Kohen, the father-in-law of Rav Shlomo Gorenchlik, Rav Shlomo Gorin. So Torah is Torah. And this is the dynamics of Torah Shebaal Peh. And if you're going to start questioning Erev, Mechirat Chametz, Ribbono Shel Olam, we're throwing away all of Yiddishkeit. You're a Sadducee, you're a Karaite, you sit in the darkness in Shabbat. And this person asked the question, and Rav Menashe Klein understood. Rav Menashe Klein tells him, yes, your question is very good, but in your case, you're explaining why you don't want to carry. You're explaining, you're worried that next week you'll be in Elizabeth, New Jersey, where there's no Erev. Today there is. Am I right, Herbie? There's an Erev today. But 30, 40 years ago, Manda Hashmei, and you mistakenly carry, so you are hesitant. So Rav Menashe Klein gives him an Eitzah. He says, once a month, carry. But in order to avoid your problem, take a friend with you. And that friend will remind you, you're only carrying because there's an Erev here. But next week, you're going to be where there's no Erev, you won't be able to carry. And that is a beautiful Eitzah. And Ein Hachinami, as I recall, and I think I was already living in Israel, because I'm living here 51 years, I think later when Rav Teitz had to give in to the pressure, there's an Erev in Kew Gardens Hills, there's an Erev in Forest Hills, there's an Erev in Muncie, there's an Erev now in Flatbush, they're talking about an Erev in Borough Park, there's an Erev in Los Angeles, and tshuva to being written, Rav Ovadia wrote a long tshuva with the Los Angeles Erev, and in Elizabeth, the pressure, so he finally built an Erev, but it was on condition, one Shabbat a year, they would make believe there was no Erev. And that Shabbat, no one was allowed to carry. They had to literally go back and ask their parents and grandparents, what did you do when you were little? How did you manage? And they had to live that Shabbat, ki'ilu, they were turning back the clock chayim, and there was no Erev whatsoever. Fascinating. I don't know how long that lasted. I would imagine that today, with every Erev, do you hear me? I just disappeared. Oh, God. Yomo, are you here?
Yeah, we hear you fine. Your screensaver came on. Move your mouse, screen should come back.
Where I move my mouse to? It says.
This doesn't matter. Just move it.
I'm moving it, but I'm not seeing anything.
Hey, we see you fine. We hear you fine.
You hear me? It says click here to launch the meeting or download and run.
No. That don't do anything. You're fine.
Okay. I can continue, but I don't see anyone. All right. The Chedden Velterein. I'm now talking to the screen. And I would imagine today in Elizabeth that every Shabbat they are nohek that there is an Erev and everyone else has an Erev. And the way things are going in the United States, you have no idea some of the mitzvah I was able to pull off. Because I've taught so many students, which gives me connections with people desperate to come in Aliyah. You have no hasaga, tolichenu komim miyut la'atzenu. Instead, it's the tolichenu biglal corona, the rioting la'atzenu. But wow, people are waking up. So Baruch Hashem, they're going to come to Israel where everyone has an Erev. But watch now. This is one of the fascinating moments of response literature. This would never, ever happen in a situation that this was a Litvisha tshuva being written. Probably would never happen with Rav Avdia Yosef with all this detail. But when all is said and done, Rav Menashe Klein is a Hasidic Yid. And here he adds an addendum. He tells a story that is second to none. And it all deals with Jews who are not makabel Torah Shabbat Peh and the way an Erev is and what it is and how we do it. And they think they're frumer than everyone else. And I'm quoting now on page 174, the final paragraph of this tshuva. And he tells the following story, that in Satma, the Av Beitin, Hagon Baal Keren LeDavid, the Av Beitin was a Gon Adir in Satma today too. They've had Avot Bateidinim who are themselves big Goinim, bigger than the Rebbeim, believe me. And they Paskin. So it says, when the Gon Baal Keren LeDavid tikein Eruv bi'iro, he instituted an Erev in his city, v'hayu sham mitnagdim, and they were mitnagdim. and like everyone else, like London, like Manchester, like Flatbush, like Borough Park, like Manhattan, there were mitnagdim, an erev Shabbos, vikem matzayin, and he said the oraita. And one of the people who opposed it took a handkerchief, tied it around his neck, and every Friday night when he came to the Avestin to wish him a good Shabbos, he would make a display how he's tying the handkerchiefs two, one to another, and tying it around his neck, kidei letzaro, to make the Av Beis Din feel bad. And he would say to the Av Beis Din, b'zeh haloshen, ich eine yodea kama erev mo'el, ich weiß nicht wie gut, was helft an erev. And then he would say, this is in Yiddish, in the tshuva, yo erev, nisht erev, there is an erev, there isn't an erev, as if to say, whatever you accomplished, and therefore I'm wearing the handkerchiefs around my neck. Every Friday night, this chutzpan would do this to eat the Av Beis Din's heart out. And one Friday night, the Gaon, the Keren David, had enough. And he said to him, Ichabda Gemara. The Gemara says, "Mishein amayda be erev hazer hareza chas v'shalom min." It's the Gemara I quoted to you. And the Av Beitin says, "I always wondered what does the Gemara mean, ein moda be erev? What does that mean? Hamachal Shabbos harehu ze ein amayda be Shabbos klal v'gam." The average Jew in America, Machalos Shabbos? It's just the Erev? Our relatives that came over 150 years ago to America, what's left of them? Children know nothing? The Judaism is meaningless? It's just an Erev? Ain't a b'Shabbos, b'Kashrut, b'Tarish Mishpacha, b'Eretz Yisrael, b'Cholat Torah Kula. So what does the Gemara mean? Ain't a Moida b'Erev, Hareza Chas v'Chalila Min. It's not such a Jew. Ah, but now I understand. You know what it means? Ain't a Moida b'Erev, Ayid v'Du Bist. It's a Jew like you. She. You're a Shema HaTorah, the picture disappeared. I need you desperately. What do I do? She'ena, they told me they're hearing me. They're seeing me. That's what the Mori said. And he said, not the click. He said, move it around, but I'm getting nowhere. Mori, you still hear me? Mori?
Yeah, you're fine. Don't worry. Yeah,
I'm not to worry. Okay, Yomuk is back here. Okay.
Yeah, I sent him a message. Come.
Okay, thank you, thank you, thank you. And ain't a moid b'era a yid v'du bist that you shayma ha'toyra v'amitzvot v'mitchaseid, but then you put on phony frumkeit u'bo leil Shabbat. And you come Friday night, v'yomer good Shabbos, yo'erev, nishterev, v'koreicha mitpachat al tzavaro, and you tie the handkerchief on your neck, zehu, eina moide be'erev, v'harehu beklau, haminim v'ha'apikosim. And boy, the Keren David told this guy off, and may us hipsik hai gavra letzaro v'kibel dvarav. After that individual stopped eating the heart out of the rav and accepted his ruling, accepted the erev, shalom al Yisrael. Now that's a very beautiful little tshuva But that story, you see, you're not going to find that story in Rav Moshe Feinstein when he writes a tshuva. You're not going to find it in the Sgan Aharon, the Pinskarav when he writes a tshuva. You're not going to find that in the Achiezer when he writes a tshuva, Reb Chaim Moshe Grishensky. You're not going to find that in the Devar Avraham, the Kovner Rav. You're not going to find that in Reb Tzchol Chanan. These were Litvakin. They were never side issues. But a Hasidish mind, what you call a hitva adut, a fabrengen, you'll ask Hasidim, what do they do when they get together? And I just saw in Besheva a beautiful story about a Breslov, a Baal Tshuva, he's putting out the TV series here. And it's the new type of Baal Tshuva where they don't tell you to separate from the world. But as Rebbeim told him, go back. He was a TV producer. Go back and do what you did before, but now do it Laman HaTorah. So he says, Hasidim kumen zusammen, come together. What do they do? Say, fabrengen. What does it mean, fabrengen? A bissel vodka, a bissel lechayim, a bissel divrei Torah, and then you tell Maisalach, you tell stories from the Rabbeim, from the Hasidim, and this is the Hasidic world. If you've listened to the Lubavitcher Rebbe's Shmuasin, so you know time after time they will regale you with stories of Hasidim of earlier generations, and this is exactly, Rav Menashe Klein. This story explains the whole Gemara. Ein amoyde b'yerev. What does it mean? What's so terrible? He wants to be machmir. But ein amoyde b'yerev, you're spitting in the face of Torah Shebaal Peh. You ain't amoyde on this, and someone is ain't amoyde on that. And before you know it, you're no less than a Reformed Jew. He cut away this part of Yiddishkeit, and you're cutting away this part of Yiddishkeit. And not to have derech eretz for a great Talmud Chacham, you go over and eat the Av Beis Din's heart out, you make a display of putting the two handkerchiefs together, tying them, I have my scarf, I can blow my nose, Ya'ediv, Nishtediv, wow, Rav Menashe Klein is fabulous here. Okay. Yomo got you back. Yomo, what did you do to get us back? Magic. Yomo says magic. Okay. Okay. It was very frightening because Talui B'day Acherim, and we don't want to feel Yazum Nishtzum. We want to be able to have confidence that it works. Okay. Let me go one step further, and you'll never forget this tshuva. And once again, it's Rav Menashe Klein with B'chvodo V'atzmo, the story that gives us a million words of insight. And here I'm quoting from Chelek Yud Gimel, Siman Samach Dalad. And he evidently got a request when Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach died. He evidently got a request to submit an article for Sefer Zikaron Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach that Machon Yerushalayim published. Now, Machon Yerushalayim, when you're publishing a Sefer Zikaron, you have to tell people to limit what they're publishing. You don't want it to be 1,000 words, 1,000 pages. It has to be a Sefer that you can bind and people can hold. So he was told it's limited to a certain length. So he writes at the start that because he's limited, he can't really write something in great depth, but he'll write the commentary on something that Reb Shlomo Zalman wrote about, which he writes, a small comment adding. And then on page Ayin, the third page of the Tshuva, when published, he tells an unbelievable story. And this story can be analyzed, repeated, halachic, hashkafet, philosophic, theological implications. The story centers around the Aderet. The Aderet was Rabbi Eliyahu David Rabinovitz Ta'omim. And by the way, we spoke about Rav Teitz before. Rav Teitz was related to the Rabinowitz Ta'omim family, the Aderet. The Aderet's life, he was born in 1843, he died in 1905. The great Gaon, his mother died when he was a little child, 5 years old. Rabbi's father, great Talmud Chacham, raised him and his brother, Tzvi Yehuda, the two of them, the Aderet and his younger brother, both of them became great Talmidei Chachamim. He was a Rosh Yeshiva in Mir, and then he was a Rav in Panovich. And in 1899, he didn't live that much longer, but 5-6 years, he emigrated to Yerushalayim, where he became the assistant Rav to Rav Shmuel Salant, with the idea being that he would succeed Rav Shmuel Salant. Rav Shmuel Salant, the great Rav Shmuel Salant, was blind at the end of his life, but he lived a very, very long life, kamat 100 years. I think he was 96, 97. He outlived those who were hired to be his assistant, the idea being they would ultimately succeed him. He outlived them. What the Aderet is very famous, his daughter Batsheva married Rav Avram Yitzchak Kohen Cook. He was the father of Rav Cook. She died a few years later, and the Aderet convinced Rav Cook to marry his niece, the daughter of his younger brother, Rav Tzvi Yehuda, and she was Rav Cook's Rebetzin Leorech Yomim Tovim. So this is the famous Aderet. He came in Aliyah. Rav Cook, his son-in-law. And what a story. And he adds this story I heard from the Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and I don't want anyone ever to challenge me that it's not exactly word by word what the Shlomo Zalman Orbach said, because when I went to visit him, I went with my son, and my son recorded it, and we have this recording until today, word by word. And he uses the word hasipul hatape ashel denu marzik oto. And what's the story? He says Rav Shlomo Zalman told him that when the Aderet died, Rabbi Tzion Yadle came to Rav Shmuel Salant. Who is Rabbi Tzion Yadle? No. How many of you are familiar with Shai Agnon's writings? Rabbi Tzion Yadle was the legendary Magid Meisharim in Yerushalayim. He gave everyone Musa. This is the one that Rav Shai Agnon portrays, that the Magid Meisharim is giving the Jews in Meisharim Musa. What can you say to these Jews? They shame me Shabbos and Kashrut and Tarat Mishpacha and raise their children and to go to Cheder. And Shai Agnon portrays, he's saying, when you turn over in your bed at night, your kippah falls off your head. That is the sin he finds with these wonderful Jews in Yerushalayim. Meredith writing, Meredith personality. This was Rabbi Adla. He comes to Reb Shmuel Salant and he tells him, Rebbe, I have a terrible problem. The Aderet just died. I was not allowed to reveal this story as long as he lived. When the Aderet came in Aliyah, he came to me. And he said, you know, I was Rav in Panovich. I was Rav in Mir. Sometimes a rabbi paskins incorrectly. I'm worried stiff. I took money from people, shelo al pi halacha. And I want to do tshuva. And the only way you can do tshuva when you don't know who you took the money from mistakenly and robbed them, you have to give it to Klal Yisrael, to the Tzibur. I want you to build an Erev in Yerushalayim. And as long as I'm alive, I will pay for the upkeep of the Erev. Do not tell anyone. I don't want anyone to know what I'm doing. He built the Erev, the upkeep. The Aderet is dead. And Rabbi Tzion Yadler tells from Shmuel Salant, I don't have the financial ability to keep the Erev up. You have to help me raise the funds. And Rabbi Shmuel Salant says to him, why didn't you tell me this before? I wasn't allowed. I couldn't say a word. Kol Zman the Aderet lived. Rabbi Shmuel Salant, good. We have to keep the Erev up. We have to raise funds. And he goes to the Chacham Bashi, the head of the Sfadik community, Rabbi Yaakov Shaul Elisar, famous people. And he tells him about the Erev. I want you to join. Help me half the cost. Chatsi chatsi. Half me, half you. And he joins. And a few days later, he sends a messenger to Rav Shmuel Salant. People are arguing with me. The other Rabbanim, we paskin like the Beis Yosef, we're choshish for the Rambam Shita, Tet Zayin Amot. How can you build an Erev? I can't join in. And Reb Shmuel Salant had to do it all by himself. Pay for the Erev, keep the Erev up, raise the funds. And Rav Shlomo Zalman said, let me tell you something. From the time on, the Sfadim refused to join. The Sfadim didn't accept the Erev. Rubam kekulam b'nehem na'asu mechalalei Shabbat v'chishev shmoteyem echad el echad. Shahayu manhigei hatzionim sham b'lishmira tadat klal rachmana litzlan. That these Jews, the Sephardic Jews, they wouldn't put up an Erev, they couldn't hold by the Erev, they didn't let them carry on Shabbat. Not one kid remained from. Came the biggest leaders of the Zionist movement. Maybe Yitzchak Navon is one of the names that he mentioned. One after one, not one remained from. But he said, "Umikilat Ashkenazim, Nishai Gedolei Yisrael uGedolei Olam." From the Ashkenazim who built the Erev, who was Samach on the Erev. Some of them became Gedolei Yisrael, Gedolei Olam, Torah leaders, general leaders of our people. Frumkeit, Mesirat Nefesh, Ibige Gebenkeit. Wow. And he says, Kol Zeh Shemati, all this I heard, me Pikat Show, from of Shlomo Zalman Orbach's mouth, Seichet Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, Ubini, Harava Gon Maradiara the Atra the Kiyat Ungva Yerushalayim, his son who succeeded him in Ramot as the Rav of Kiryat Ungva, Hayasham Biota Pigisha Vehiklit Kol Hadiburim Vahasipur Al Hatape Asha Odeni Marsikba. Well, I don't have to tell you, this story needs no commentary. And this is Reb Menashe Klein. This is the Erev. And what a fascinating topic, and how much material and how many years you can devote to studying it. To reiterate, what did we do today? Well, we finished out the tshuva. We finished out Reb Elazar Melamed. We alluded to his uniqueness in taking on the Reform lady rabbi from Paris. Did he do right? Did he do wrong? It's an ongoing machloket. I would be happy to speak to that Reform rabbi, but my take on her is a little bit different than Rav Eliezer Melamed. He says that at least they help stem the tide of assimilation. And I feel that it encourages assimilation. I know that Michael Miller had it out with me. No, I don't. I'm not that foolish. I understand that millions of Jews would have left Yiddishkeit. We should have had 20 million Jews in America today. But it would have happened regardless. The melting pot, the modern world, the Western civilization, the pre-corona stock market, and all that goes with it. But I know from my own experience, the Jews who would have sought out Rabbanim Gedolei Yisrael, but my rabbi told me I can drive the shul Shabbos. The first thing I would have told her is, in my humble opinion, you're not a Reform rabbi. There's no such thing as Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, Liberal, Reconstructionist. There is only being a Jew. And some of us are more Jewish than others in our behavior. And I hope all Jews will rise and achieve more and more, etc. But okay, this issue hangs fire, and I'm not the first one to deal with it. Believe me, none of us have the perfect answer, and we'll deal with it in great depth in the Monday class, but probably next year. We also dealt with two additional tshuvas that are very fascinating. Yer Shabbos, Nis Shabbos, and Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and what a story about Reb Tzion Yadler and the Aderet. Now, what I've decided to do is, we'll, technically speaking, today is June 14th, tomorrow is June 15th, the year in the Kollel ends. If you have no objection, I'll extend the year to June 30th, and we'll have two more weeks of Sheyorim. Is that okay? Everyone will be here. Wave your hand if you'll be with me for these two extra weeks. Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you. That way, I will have given even more Sheyorim this year than I gave last year, and I'll make up to the week after Purim where they shot me in the head after the Sunday Shir, remember? And I'll make up for the week after Pesach when we were first trying to get the Zoom organized. Okay, so then I'm not going to say some people in America wanted me to say Shir during the summer. I need time to catch my breath. I'm not going to America. We canceled the trip. I feel very bad about it because it's not that I go to America to shop Macy's, but I do some good things, etc. And all that, of course, has to be canceled. But it's canceled anyway because shuls are not meeting it. It just can't get off the floor. But I also miss my students that I would see every year in the States. So it's a difficult decision, but we have no choice. But I hope I can do a little traveling in Israel and visit grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Again, it depends on the matzav. But the family is spread out all the way from Yerushalayim to Haifa, the Shomron, Tel Aviv, the center of the country, etc., etc. Tomorrow, we pick up exactly where we left off. A very important shiur tomorrow. I'll show you more material. And we're sailing into Kashrut, which probably will occupy the rest of the year. Next week in the Sunday class, the Halakha Jewish Press enters into responsa literature. So that will be fascinating. All right, Morty, a title for today. Sometimes Frumkeit is detrimental. Sometimes Frumkeit is detrimental. I think that sums up the last two Shavuot. And let me say to everyone listening and to those looking at me, and Yomo, you see, you got to explain to me what happened, because this is frightening that Yomo understands what's happening. You're great. Morty, you're great. You emailed him, and Yomo says he now understands what happened. He'll explain it to me if my mind can comprehend it after the class. I want to thank everyone for honoring me with your screen presence. I feel very bad that Mark and Mark are wide awake all night. We finish Shalilam. Mark, you have one Mark at least I know has a good wife who allows him such luxuries. And to all those listening across the world, the wide expanse of Jewish existence. And again, I apologize. Certain people requested they want me to Zoom here, there. I don't want to reveal my age, but I think you all know it. Born 1937, so for my class, my two classes, and let it go all over the world. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Morty, open it for questions.